This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here today to talk about financial planning. Financial planning in particular with Joe Sullender, certified financial planner, senior vice president, investments, financial strategies group, of Wells Fargo Advisors. That show's almost over. Nice title.
Keeps getting longer for some reason.
Oh, I know why, because you're good. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
Everything's good. It's been a while, and we're soon to have the arrival of Tammy Flanagan, co-host of the show. And Tammy is stuck in, I guess, the usual Washington traffic, and it's rainy today. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we'll bump along till Tammy comes along. And I think today what we're going to talk about are things that you said you'd like to talk about. What do you think you need to live in retirement? Determining what you're going to get out of your federal retirement, determining where you come up with the difference, if there is a difference between your benefit and your life expenses, and managing your money to generate that income and everything in between. Mm-hmm. So let's say I come to you after listening to you at the seminar and I say, Joe, I have an idea that I'm going to have these nice benefits. Now, if I'm FERS, I have maybe three pots. If I'm CSRS, I might have one and a half pot. And I just don't know if it's enough. And I'm not ignorant to financial planning, but I don't really know the intricacies. What are you going to ask me?
I think the first thing that we'd ask is a question you can't answer, which is, what do you think you need to live on a monthly basis? People can't answer that question for whatever reason. It's, you know, we have our take-home pay, we live our lives, we pay our bills, we spend money, and most people feel stumped when you ask that question. And I think that's part of the problem, is it's hard to know if you can afford to retire without really knowing what those actual goals and numbers are. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this today is I've seen more and more as I meet with people as they have in their minds that they can't retire because they're thinking about how they have to replace their full taxable income. You know, I make X amount of dollars and I'm only going to get 40% of that when I retire, or 30% of that, whatever it may be. What I like to start with is this, is your take-home pay. What are you bringing home every 2 weeks? Let's add that up over the year. That's what you need to replace. You're living off of your take-home pay, not your gross pay. So to help people answer the question that I would ask you that you can't answer, which is, what do I need to live on a monthly basis? The way I ask it is, what's your take-home pay? And how much of that are you using every month?
Okay. And as we walk through this, as a company, we do more pre-retirement seminars than we do mid or beginning, but we're doing more mid and beginning than we ever have before. So when we talk today, for those of you beginning or mid-career folks, or you know them that want to refer the show, we'll address some of those comments. Beginning career, I don't know that people are as anxious about retirement planning as they are once they establish an identity, if you will, work-wise. So anyway, let's go back to your comment. Now, if I'm spending all my bring home, and somebody might say, well, how do you know I'm doing that? And I'm sure you have them fill out some type of financial statement. And darn if there aren't credit card debt on there, or a car debt. Or, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's got some kind of debt, but sometimes a credit card debt is excessive, or the mortgage is maybe more than what it should be. So they are spending more than they bring home.
Yeah, I'll tell you, normally, I mean, there's sort of one of two situations. One is, right, let me say three. One is where, you know what, it's one paycheck to the next. We're not running up debt. We're not really saving a lot of money, but we're doing fine with our take-home pay. Then we can just use that take-home pay as the target. But certainly you could have the other two situations, which is what you described, where somebody is actually spending more than their take-home pay. Then they have to take a closer look at what sort of debt that they're incurring and add that to the take-home. So if I'm bringing home $6,000 a month and adding $500 a month to my credit cards, let's certainly hope that's not the case. But if I am, then I'm really spending $6,500. I'll tell you, I find that very rarely. I don't know if it's just because I'm a financial planner and people in that situation don't want to show me that. But I run into more where it's the opposite, where people are bringing home, let's say, $6,000 a month and finding their checking account and savings accounts growing. And, you know, adding more money to it so that they may only be spending $5,000 of that. So that's an important distinction, is not everyone spends their take-home pay. Some spend more, some spend less.
Okay, so the ones that spend less, then it's the direction of where that savings is going to go. So let's look at the upbeat side, and somebody does actually save money. Do you find, this is a very general statement, that when people manage their own money, they do an okay job, not so okay? Or do they do a good, just as a general statement?
Boy, that's setting me up there. let me say, I work, you know, entirely with federal employees in my business. And so I've kind of got a little stereotype feel. I will say that as federal employees at large are incredibly good savers. I mean, I run into that quite more than you do with the population at large, that they do a good job of saving money. They're conservative. They don't, you know, spend more than they bring home as a rule. The problem that I run into, if again, is a general statement, and I have to put asterisks after that, you know, to say so, is that they tend to save the money but aren't sure what to do with it next. You know, there's a lot of people who build up a lot of money in their checking and savings account and are unsure of where the next move would be. Where do I actually invest that money?
That's a good comment, because I think it also parallels the thrift savings plan. A large percent of the money is in the G fund. Now, we're not going to say that's bad. We're not going to say that that's good.
But it's a default.
It profiles the individual you're talking to.
Right.
I'm somewhat risk averse. Unfortunately, the term risk, it just sounds bad, doesn't it? I don't want to put my money at risk, but, you know, there's guarantee, and anything else that isn't guaranteed, there's a risk to it. That doesn't mean it's overly risky. It just means that if you want a greater rate of return, you can't leave it in there.
Well, I found just from the people that, you know, doing the seminars and being out there talking to federal employees, my hunch is that most of the money in the G fund isn't there because people are risk averse. It's there because it's the default, that people just put their money in the TSP and put it in the G and don't ever really look at it, aren't really sure what to do with it next. That's one thing the L funds have helped people with, the life cycle funds, okay. Just giving them an option.
This is good because, of course, this is Financial Literacy Month, and the entire shows on Mondays, and if you're listening, this is broadcast other than Mondays, is going to be on financial literacy, and we're trying to get real literate here with the PhD in literacy, Joe. All righty, so then how do you gently, I won't say persuade, but how do you gently educate somebody that, gee, if you do this, this is what you could look forward to in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And do you do this on graphs or do you do it verbally?
Verbally. I have software that does this in a super complicated way, and that helps put validity behind it. But what really helps people is when you put it in simple English. I really think the first step, and the thing I want to stress, you know, today, is when you figure out what your take-home pay is and what you need to live off of, and then look at what your retirement checks, that's the first place to start. What would you get from your FERS annuity, your CSRS annuity, your Social Security, all of those different sources? What would that all add up to? How does that compare to your take-home pay, and what's the difference? It's really surprising how many people are shocked when I show them there's not a huge difference. You know, people think, well, I'm only going to be getting 40% of my gross or 30 or whatever their payout looks like. And they find when they actually look at the numbers with their net, it's a lot closer. And that's the main point I want to make sure everybody realizes.
Okay, so I'm coming to you, I'm a Fed, and I say, well, this is what I bring home. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, that's what you bring home, but in retirement, there's some things that will not be subtracted from your retirement income that are subtracted from your salary income, the biggest being TSP.
Well, exactly. Well, that's why I look at it on a take-home basis.
Yeah.
You know, what you're grossing right now is, as we all disappointingly find out, is a lot more than what your actual take-home pay is. And you don't need to replace all of those things that are taken out of your paycheck. You know, you just need to replace the money you were using to consume, you know, to live your life.
Right. And those other subtractions that one would not have in retirement, CSRS, or this is going to be a greater subtraction, the retirement contribution. But the CSRSers are a smaller percentage of the population than what they once were. And the FERS has a smaller percentage withheld. So if you quote, add those things back, and then there are, I guess, some other things that would stop at retirement that then would say, okay, you don't need to replicate that, so you don't have to have 100% of your
gross
compensation. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I don't do what you do, but I understand it to a degree.
And I think that the thing that disappoints me is that people just assume when they see that their annuity is going to be a percentage of their take home, they assume that there's such a gap that they don't look any further. They just sort of assume that I'm only going to get 30%. I can't do this. That's why I really stress in the seminars, and I'm so pleasantly surprised how when people do this, how they're, oh, you know, I can actually make this happen. I can do this. So that's the main point, is to just take a look at the actual numbers before you draw any conclusions that you can't retire.
Okay. Years ago, this was, I don't know, 10 years ago, we did a basic financial planning discussion at a very large conference. It was called Get Real About Retirement Dollars, but it was really skinny down to, okay, and we started with, where do you spend your money? Now, in the hour that we had, or the 2 hours, I forget what it was. Of course, we're not going to drill down to everybody's, but just hit broad, you know, what do you spend on groceries? What do you spend on house payments? What do you spend on this, that, or another thing? And, okay, that's the stage, exactly what you said. You got to look at that first, and then we said, okay, let's compare it to what you're going to have in retirement dollars. Social Security, annuity, et cetera, part-time job, and then we subtracted out the tax. And then we compared the two numbers and say, do you have a deficit or do you have a surplus?
It's a great way to do it.
And more often than not, it was the deficit. Now, it's not because they had it down to the proverbial gnat's eyelash, you know, in front of a group of whatever in an hour, but at least it got them thinking. And then the comment was, okay, what do we do to lessen or rid ourselves of that deficit? Now it's going to come from two places. It's going to be cut spending, or maybe we over allocated expenses to retirement, or how do we generate more income?
Right.
So this is where Joe comes in, and I come in, I said, Joe, you know, this is what I've got. And you mentioned the L funds, or the comparable of an L fund, depending on who comes. I'd imagine people late, early career, mid-career, and probably the bulk, and you tell me, are pre-retirement. But what do you do with them to educate them as to the time value of money left in a place where it can grow more so than a fixed rate of return?
Well, and it's not so much that as what we're looking at is what you just described, your scenario of coming in and saying, okay, here's what the deficit is going to be for me in retirement between my retirement checks and what I need to live. We now have something we can work with. We have a mathematical equation we can solve, which is, you know, Joe, I need $1,000 a month to go with my other income. So now I can say, well, tell me what you've saved already, how many years you have until we're going to need to draw that income. And we can simply do some math to figure out what sort of growth rate you're going to need on all that money that you've saved and hopefully continue to save to be able to generate that income. Now, as far as the rate of return, that answers itself, because we find out that, Bob, based on what you've already saved and the deficit you have to replace, you're going to need 5% a year, 8% a year, whatever the number is. You might find you need 1% a year. If that's the case, we put it all in the CDs and banks and so forth. You might find you need 9 or 10% a year, and then we're going to need to have a conversation about being more aggressive. So that's the nice thing about the process that you've just walked through, is that we now have an actual goal. And I should add one thing, is that for mid-career people, we would have the conversation the way that we just had it. As you get closer to retirement, one exercise I tell an awful lot of people to go through is just actually track your spending. And I don't mean budget yourself. Just do what you want to do the last year or two before you retire and see what it costs. That gives people such a level of comfort to know that the number that you gave me, where you said, here's what I need to live, is pretty close.
Okay, and for those of you all listening, these are not two preachers preaching to the public. You can do this with a simple You could do it with a spreadsheet.
Absolutely.
You could do a Quicken type or QuickBooks.
There's lots of online calculators on the internet that you can play with this stuff, you know.
And I think looking at that, now I'm even talking about myself. You know, I'm an accountant, you know, and supposedly we have our first paycheck we haven't cashed yet. But I look at
true?
It. Well, Nancy might agree with that, but so the comment I'm making, until you see it, and I'm even surprised, you know, and I'm supposed to understand money, and I go, we really did that? And then you think twice. I do this often on the show, but please, people, don't hang up when you hear this. But if today anybody listening spends a dollar, you had to make more than a dollar to spend the dollar. So if you look at if you're paying Social Security, if you're paying federal tax, state tax, and let's say all that combined is 33%. So to spend a dollar, it costs you $1.50. To spend $50, it costs you $75. And you shouldn't
this is
walk.
Depressing, Bob.
Yeah, I know that. And
what a rainy day.
People are going to walk around with that in their pocket, and it's going to be the weight that says, if I pull it out, I'm really pulling it. But it's just, it takes sometimes the discretionary, just, you know, I'm going to go out and do this. And I'm not going to say you shouldn't go to a movie or you shouldn't have a pizza or you shouldn't do this.
I don't want somebody to retire under that sort of pretense.
Right.
It doesn't work. I mean, even if you do actually stick to this budget you've put on yourself, you know, that's not what the point of retirement is. The point is for you to just continue living your life the way you used to and hopefully even better. Travel, do things that you haven't been able to do while you were working.
I use that example more so with the people that the deficit's not going to be fixed unless they start thinking about what they spend.
Exactly. Then they have to reduce it.
And
you have to have the very, you know, sort of real conversation about, look, if you ever want to retire, this is what you need to do. But, you know, I just think so much of this is the fear of the unknown. I think, you know, you ask the average, and I know there's been surveys and studies done on this, and you ask the average person, you know, if they're in good shape for retirement, and people tend to be pretty pessimistic right now. And a lot of the time they're answering a question they haven't really looked into whether it's true or not.
Okay. And we have a frequent emailer to the show. And he sent a couple emails in, and this plays into to what we're talking about. And the question here is, it's surprising how many individuals do not take into consideration long-term care in their retirement planning. When should an individual start paying for long-term care? Secondly, what do you think of dividing a TSP account of X dollars? He puts a number in, but I don't think that would be right to mention it, into an annuity, and the other half, 3% monthly withdrawal. So this gets into what we've been talking about, except for the long-term care. Long-term care, I don't know enough about it to say somebody should or shouldn't. Theoretically, they should, but I don't know all the nuances that maybe you do.
It's a hard thing to tell somebody if they should or shouldn't, really, because like lots of insurances, you know, it's beautiful if you need it. You know, if you've bought long-term, and I assume that's what he's asking about is when should you start paying for buying long-term care insurance, maybe. You know, that's one way to do it is to buy a policy to be able to cover your long-term care and kind of put that money aside and say, good, I've taken care of that particular goal if it does happen. Another way is sort of what he's asking in his second question is just running the math to see, do I have enough money set aside that if I were to go into long-term care that I could afford it? And some people buy long-term care insurance because they don't want to use their money for that. They want to leave their money to their family. So they buy the long-term care insurance as a cheaper way to say, we're going to cover this need if we have it so that we don't eat up our assets with that particular situation.
Okay. And then with the cash in the TSP, the comment is, I want to take a chunk, or excuse me, should I take a chunk and buy an annuity? And let's assume we're going to buy the thrift annuity, but just for sake of discussion, there are annuities everywhere.
Sure.
And then the other half I'm going to do X with. Now, with regards to an annuity, oftentimes, at least I get caught in this in class, the base annuity somebody gets that is their defined benefit plan, years in service, highest compensation, that type of annuity. And they go, no, that's a pension. Well, there's a fine line between the two. It's really an annuity. Annuity sounds like annual.
Your FERS or CSRS
right.
annuity.
It's an annual payment for life. Now, you know, the guarantee here couldn't be better. It's the U.S. government. Now, you can buy annuities outside of that, but what we're talking about is the earned annuity, the defined benefit. But leave that go. That's coming one way or the other. What the question here is, I have money in thrift, and I would like to buy, or what do you think about buying an annuity with it? I'll just do my uneducated comment, and then you'll correct me. Alrighty, so annuities generally are interest rate sensitive, as best I understand. And in today's world, interest rates are...
Based on when you start the annuity.
Exactly.
Right. Once you've chosen the annuity, the interest rates don't matter, but what you're saying is true.
Right. So... if interest rates are low, of course, the older you are, that changes a little bit because, let's be real, if you're an annuity company and you're selling an annuity, you better be aware of who's buying it because you have to project their life expectancy. They don't do that with thrift annuity. They don't ask you those kind of questions. But
it's still an insurance company underneath the whole thing.
Right. So if I'm coming in, okay, Joe, I've got X hours in my thrift, and I want to take half of it out and buy an annuity today. Now, I don't have to buy it today, so what do you tell me?
No. How's that for an answer? I actually, in 20 years of doing this for a living, have never recommended the TSP annuity. And, I mean, I've recommended every other withdrawal option and all sorts of other scenarios, depending on someone's situation, but not the annuity. Part of it is two of the reasons you brought up. One is interest rates have always, you know, in the last 20 years, really, have been low enough to where when you see the dollar amount that they're going to pay you in the annuity, it tends to people kind of raise an eyebrow and think that's not really that much considering the balance that I have. The other thing is the life expectancy. If you're basically the point of an annuity and why this gentleman would want to do this is he's basically saying, I want to give my TSP to an insurance company so they can pay it out to me over the rest of my life because I'm worried that if I have the money and take it out over the rest of my life that I'll run out. So you're saying, I'm going to pass that risk to the insurance company. When you start running the math on that, if you were to just leave it in the TSP, even in the G fund, and make the same withdrawals, that the break-even point is way down the road. So that's a function of life expectancy. It's a function of the interest rate behind the annuity. And I really don't like it for this guy's idea because he's talking about using it for long-term care. The annuity is a fixed dollar amount for the rest of his life. I'd rather him leave all of his money in the TSP, take withdrawals as he needs them now, and maybe he needs to increase his withdrawals when the time comes to pay for his care.
Okay. Now you hit on I love the answer, and some people might not understand that last sentence.
Okay.
You can take monthly payments out of the thrift. There's no question.
Right.
But there's a misconception that it's a one-and-done calculation. There are two methods. One method is it's based on your life expectancy, and it might vibrate up and down over the years depending on the money that was made inside the thrift. Mm-hmm. Now, the second one, I'm not so sure everyone is aware of, it's the reverse. You tell them what you want.
Right.
Oftentimes, people think I can only do that once in my lifetime. Well, that's not true. If they set the monthly payment at the absolute minimum, which I believe is $25 a month, every year they can bring that up. And then once they satisfy, let's say they need to buy a car. So they bring it up to $200 a month, 3 years, pay the car off, then bring it back down to $25. So you're in control and it hits exactly what you said, that I can vary that later on with monthly payments, whereas some people think, no, you can't. Mm-hmm. You're subject to some kind of mathematical calculation, and you're being told what you're going to get. Well, it's actually the opposite. The second one, you're telling them what you want.
But I think the reason why people think it's restricted is, to further clarify, is that you only can change it once a year.
Yeah.
You know, that it's, I think, in January that you can elect that. So if somebody wanted more flexibility, then they'd have to move the TSP to an IRA, where you can take the money out on demand anytime and change the dollar amount anytime. But it's not like the TSP, I think sometimes it's presented that it's this completely restrictive thing that you start taking withdrawals and you're stuck with whatever. You can stop the withdrawals and you can change them once a year. What you're really restricted with is just pulling money out whenever you feel like it.
Right. Now, what I've understand from I won't say the source, that the TSP is looking to be able to have the individual go to them twice a year and change it.
Okay.
Once a year, you're absolutely right, is rough. How do you know in December or January that you're going to need money mid-year?
Right. And what do you do if you get in the middle of the year and something happens and you need more money?
Right.
You know? I understand. A lot of people ask me the question all the time about, will they ever change that? Will they improve it? Why don't they let me take money out whenever they want? And my impression has just always been that it's to keep the cost of the TSP down.
Right.
I mean, the TSP is meant to be a very, very inexpensive, you know, simple retirement plan. And so, you know, they don't want federal employees, the millions of them, I'm sure, that are out there that are retired, calling up every day asking for $100 for this, $200 for that.
Well, that was actually true a number of years ago when a number of people became day traders,
mm-hmm.
And they wanted to be able to do that with the thrift. And
I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, no. No, I mean.
Those were the days, right?
All right, and let's go back to then the question. We hit the annuity part pretty hard, and then we're going to leave the rest in there. Now, if we were advising this person, what would you say to do with the other half? Now we know we got a cash flow of X dollars coming from the half plus the defined benefit plan, the FERS annuity, and maybe Social Security. And that's a maybe we'll touch on in a little bit. So how does somebody think globally with the money now? We've got the money that we can control. We've asked for an annuity that we really can't control once mm-hmm. we've made the decisions. And we've got the defined benefit plan, the FERS or the CSRS annuity that's pretty defined.
Mm-hmm.
And Social Security that's pretty defined. So now I got this nice-sized pot still left. What do I do?
First thing you do is we figure out, like we said in the initial discussion, is what that gap is. Okay, so say I'm short $1,000 a month. I need $1,000 to come. I've got money, all the other money coming from my annuity, Social Security, what have you. I need $1,000 a month to come from my TSP, my savings, whatever I've accumulated over my lifetime. The first place I would go is my savings. I wouldn't withdraw from my TSP. I wouldn't automatically. A lot of people feel like when they retire, I've got to automatically set up some sort of withdrawal system. I mean, I don't know that you need to do that. I'd rather you spend your savings first because your savings is free for you to withdraw. The TSP is taxable income to you. So you don't want to withdraw your TSP until you've spent all your other money, your savings, your mutual funds, your non-retirement accounts. So the answer to your question is, what do you take out from your TSP? I would back up and say, what do I need to take out from my investments, and then where's the best place for me to take it?
Well put, and it has a spinoff benefit. Depending on the size of one's income, the more money you take out that's reportable, it could impact the Medicare on your Social Security and premiums.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joe, I think it's only fair for everyone to know how to get in touch with you.
Sure. I'll leave my email as the easiest way to get in touch with me is joseph.sullender, and that's S-U-L-L-E-N-D-E-R, at wellsfargoadvisors.com. joseph.sullender@wellsfargoadvisors.com. It's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Okay. Then we know what to do.
And I always welcome any questions anyone has. Please feel free. I spend the first half hour every day just hammering questions.
Okay. Now, the folks that are listening, we are live, and we are live for about 25 more minutes. But after that, don't call us. But not because we don't want to talk to you. We won't be here to talk to you. But if you do want to talk to us now, I think it'd be a good time to open up the phones. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. You could ask us finance questions, tax questions, to a very limited degree, benefit questions, etc. All righty. So we've got a caller from Virginia. Question about retirement from the federal government. Good morning.
How you doing?
Everything's good. How about
Hello?
You?
The question is, the FERS is payment from FERS. What is the payment that you get from the government when you retire? What is that called?
It's an annuity. If you're covered under FERS, or CSRS for that example, but you ask about FERS. If you're covered under FERS, you receive an annuity after you've worked at least 5 years, and it's based on your highest compensation for your last 3 years, or three highest years, and you get generally speaking, 1% for each year. So if you work 25 years, you get 25% of your highest 3 years' compensation. Now, that's overly simplified, and Tammy might get mad at me for trying to do something I shouldn't, but that's what you'll get at a minimum. Now, because you're FERS, you're also entitled to Social Security, depending on your age. If you're too young to get Social Security, currently you're then entitled to get something called a supplement. Now, it will be paid to you in the form of an annuity, not as Social Security. So, am I making sense so far?
Yeah, so far you are.
So now we've got some money in the thrift. And we'd say, gee, this is nice that I have this other money, but I saved this money so, like Joe said, I can enjoy life. So with regards to the thrift, if it stays in the thrift, you can take monthly payments, but it can't be just at your whim, if you will. So you might want to consider, and Joe, I think, might mirror this, that some of that money might go into an IRA so it could be there at your disposal. There's nothing wrong with the thrift, but the distribution options, let's say you wanted to take a nice trip and spend a few more bucks than what's sitting around comfortably in your savings account, you can just go pull it out of an IRA. Now, of course, you will pay taxes on it, but you follow me there?
Yeah, I follow you there.
Did we answer your question?
Yeah, you answered the question, Scott. Okay. So, like I said last week, I'll be 61 years old in June.
Okay.
So, is that a good age? I got 28 years in the government. Is that a good age to retire?
You want an honest answer? No, unless you know that what we just discussed will fund your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Now, if there's any debate, it's very hard to make up that sweet spot that you have right now. For every additional year, you're going to make more on the job than certainly you would in retirement. You're going to add to your retirement cash flow and the like. I understand after a certain, a lot of people who have been working since they're 12 years old, and you go at 61, it's 49 years, I think I've had enough. But whatever decision you make today is going to impact you for the rest of your life. So if there is a debate as to whether what you've set aside and what you're going to get is going to carry you to the way you want to be accustomed to, I don't know that I would leave. Joe, help me here. I'm trying to be a shrink.
Well, my main point would be to take the time to look at what your retirement check is going to give you and what else you can generate from the other savings and money you have and make sure it's enough before you retire. What Bob's saying is true is it's a lot easier if the math doesn't work today for you to say, okay, I just need to work till I'm 63 or 64 to make it work. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to find out when you're 70 years old that you're not going to have enough money. Your options are much more limited at that point.
All right, Mike, I think the phone lines are stacked up for once. Do we have another caller? Good morning.
Learn what factors to take into consideration when determining to withdraw funds either by drawing Social Security or TSP.
Boy.
So if you need some funds, which pot to try and take them out?
Okay, Joe and Tammy just joined us. I mean, it couldn't have been a better question.
Because we got Social Security mixed in there, and Tammy's here to help with that. As far as the timing of when to withdraw the money, I mean, what you're really looking at, like we talked about, is what that gap is between your annuity and what you need. My stance, and Tammy will probably add comments to this, is that for Social Security, is whenever you start needing money to go ahead and take it. I think taking it at 62 when you're first eligible is fine, and it's what I recommend, as long as you're not going to be working. If you're going to work and earn any income, then there's an offset there. And so if you're retiring at 62, let's say, and you need another $1,000 or $2,000 a month, I would start taking Social Security. I think it's more advantageous than you withdrawing from your TSP. Tammy, I don't know if you want to add to that. Welcome.
Hey.
I thought
I'd come in for a few minutes. So the question was, should I take Social Security at 62 rather than
she's
later?
Saying she's retiring, and we're talking about, you know, where should she take the money from first? And I already talked about how from your assets, you want to take it from your non-TSP IRA-type assets first because of the taxation of it. Then my additional comment was just that if you should go ahead and take Social Security Security if you need the income from it, and you're not going to be working.
Yeah, I guess there's also a few other strategies involved when you go to take Social Security, especially if you're married.
Right.
The only problem is those strategies, you can't really employ them until you reach the full retirement age. So if you started at 62 and then you wanted to, say, just claim your spouse's benefit and delay your own till later.
Right, right.
You can't do that. You have to wait till you're 66.
How old are you, if we may ask? Caller? Is she still there? She's not there.
We're having a little trouble with the phones this morning.
But anyway,
so just say, for example, if she was 66 and if she was married, widowed, or divorced, she could claim half of her spousal benefit and delay her own until 70 and get a 32% increase just for waiting.
Right.
So the only problem with taking it at 62 is that you don't have those options to do those strategies, which can really pay off if you live long enough. And I think, you know, the problem with Social Security is if you don't know the end date, it's kind of hard to know if you should take
it
early.
When is the end of your retirement, if you could tell us that?
That's, you know, I say, do you need the money? Are you still working? And how's your health?
Mm-hmm.
And if you knew the answer to those three questions, you'd know exactly when to take Social Security. But we don't always know.
For those of you that might not be familiar with the name Tammy Flanagan, you should become familiar. Tammy, among her many things, she writes a column in GovExec every Friday morning and covers subjects just like this. Now, not only does she do it each week, but it's archived on our website as well as GovExec's, but our website's simpler to get to, NITPINC.com. She presents retirement seminars. She's on different radio shows. What else do you do? There isn't much else you don't do.
I listen to this show. I was enjoying it on the way in as I'm sitting through all it's that bewitching moment. You leave 5 minutes on either side of when you plan to leave, and you hit everything there was to hit. Plus, Idaho Avenue was closed, which wasn't fun.
I don't envy you. It's gut-wrenching.
But I was really enjoying listening to Joe's. He is so logical. I think that's what everybody likes about you, is that you just tell we can understand it.
Yeah.
Because that's the same thing I think Bob and I try to do as well, is, you know, this isn't rocket science.
You know, behind the scenes, you can make it rocket science.
Absolutely.
with regression analysis and charts and graphs. But communicating that to the public, it's hard enough to make that leap from working your whole life to not working and thinking this money is now all I've got and I'm going to live off of it the rest of my life. A chart and a graph isn't going to motivate somebody to do that. It's going to be sort of the logical, okay, here's how we're going to go from step one to step two to step three. Exactly.
Let's work with where we are. And I guess the other thing I would mention, because I heard the last caller called in and wanted to know about FERS. And he was, you know, you were explaining very well, Bob, about how the FERS basic benefit works.
I listened to you for 20-some years.
And you said Tammy might correct you,
that.
And here she is.
But no, I'm not going to correct that. But the other thing I wanted to mention when we were talking about just Social Security a minute ago is that for some employees, Social Security can be the key, because it's tilted towards the low-wage earner. So if somebody had a lower salary throughout their lifetime, they're going to get a 30 or 40% replacement from Social Security.
Yeah.
But if you're making a six-figure salary or higher, you know, if you're in the grade 12 or 15 range, then Social Security is going to play a much smaller role. And now you're going to have to really strategize your savings and your investments to make it work and make you have enough income to do the things you want to do.
Which I just want to bring this back to my first point, which is that people are pleasantly surprised when they actually run the numbers. The lower wage earners see that Social Security and their retirement check actually make up quite a bit of replacing their take-home pay. And the higher wage earners find they're normally savers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've normally saved more money. And when you're making, you know, over $100,000 and you're saving a big portion of that, you only need to replace your usage, you know, the net money that you're left over with. So that's a much smaller number based on what their high three looks like.
I'm always amazed when I meet people at seminars and they're telling me, well, I'm already maxing out my thrift. I'm already making the catch-up contribution. So it's like, wow, you know, you're doing great then, because you're already getting used to living on less. So you're not spending all your dollars.
I just hate to see people who think they can't afford to retire, but they've never really looked at it. They've never run the numbers. They just assume that's the case.
But you've hit it hard several times. What do you spend?
What do you spend?
Yeah. You know?
Right, exactly. What is your... Yeah.
Okay. Now, again, if anybody wants to call, 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Now, our favorite emailer, Tammy, he actually, we did one, but then he sent one in this morning. And he said, do you think the public is saving enough for retirement with possible cuts in Social Security in the future? We don't know that that's going to happen. We don't know that it's not going to happen. I don't know how many times I've heard individuals say they're having money problems, but go to the casinos. Well, that's why they're so popular, I think. It's,
they're building more of them.
I think,
well, that's, for some people, that's their retirement plan.
I don't know about you all. They buy lottery tickets at work, and they said, do you want to buy one? I said, well, you think I'm crazy? If you win, I'm going to be the only one left. I want to buy. So, you know, for a buck or $2, I can dream for a week.
That's fun.
Anyway, but if somebody's saying, no, it's more than a buck or two, well, you can't go to the casino. You got to go to the tried and true path that Joe has laid out, right?
To save money. That's really what it is, yeah.
And if you look at those numbers and you say, well, you know what, this really isn't enough, I always say that then don't worry, because there's always a solution. You just work a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And every day that you work, you're adding to all of those different pots of money. So, you know, maybe your first goal is unrealistic, but you can set another one that might look a lot better even just 2 or 3 years down the road.
It's amazing to me, though, how if that, say I use an example, that gap was $1,000 a month that you needed to replace in your income. If you work one more year, the gap is smaller because your FERS or CSRS annuity is larger. You know, maybe you've delayed taking Social Security and you have more money. So not only are you working one more year and saving one more year and getting more investment money, but you're also having less to replace. So I can't stress
enough. And less years to spend it.
And less years. Yeah, well, somebody brought that up. Yeah, you have a shorter retirement period.
That's right. It's work till you're 92 and everybody can retire.
One of my favorite jokes, one client who told me, they said that if you wait long enough to retire, you don't need any money at all.
That's right. That's a plan.
That was kind of depressing.
That's one plan. That's especially
that's
if
Bob's
you love
plan, actually.
Exactly. If you love your job, you can do it.
Okay, this is a Tammy question, and it's okay. From a caller, and you can read the question, and who better to answer it?
Okay, let's see. If under the old system, can you not collect Social Security? Okay, I think the question is, if I'm going to retire under CSRS where I haven't paid into Social Security my whole career, is there any way I can collect Social Security? The answer is yes. If you have paid into it through other work that you've done, you might have had a part-time job in high school, you might have worked in the private sector for a few years, you might work after you retire. Many people, you know, have part-time jobs or full careers after they retire. So if you earn 40 credits, or what we used to call 40 quarters of coverage, you are fully insured. Doesn't that sound like I'm fully insured? That just means you're going to get something, which is always better than
Nothing.
That's right. So if you're CSRS and if you've spent most of your career under civil service retirement, don't expect a lot, but you can still get something. And if nothing else, it might be enough to pay for Medicare Part B so that you can enroll in that and not have it deducted from your civil service retirement check. But then the other point is, if you're going to work after you retire, the goal would not be to collect Social Security.
Right.
The goal would be because you want to put more money away, or you want to do something, or it's, you know, you want to make a little extra money. So that's a side benefit, I would say, because it is going to be affected by your government pension. But nonetheless, it doesn't hurt. It's not going to change your government pension. It's not going to reduce what you collect.
We had a show on Social Security last week, not too far. This was really good basics, and like Tammy mentioned, the things that used to be called quarters, now they're credits, call them what you want, but he explained just very basically, you know, this is what gets you in the door, this is what gets you further into the door and the like. If you'd like to listen to it, it's archived on the website, NITPINC.com.
And the other thing people under civil service can do is there's a calculator, and you probably mentioned it last week, SocialSecurity.gov, that'll do the windfall elimination provision calculation. So people under CSRS and other non-Social Security covered retirement systems would need to consider that. But it's on there. It's very user-friendly. It's not hard to do.
Because, Tammy, when they get, if they get the mailing from Social Security, it'll show the full amount, and they'll need to go into that calculator and adjust it. Right.
Right. And the mailings no longer come
right,
in the mail.
Don't get those anymore anyway.
You still have to go to SocialSecurity.gov either way.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, they have an estimator. They call it the WEP estimator.
Is that somewhat new, the WEP?
It's been on there for a long time, but they've made it much easier to find. Social Security has really done a good job of redoing their website, making it very user-friendly. So when you pull up the page, it'll say things you can do online, and it's right there, right in front of you. And that's one of the things you can do online.
Because I think it's something misunderstood and painted as dark. But if you had something where you could actually calculate it, it's nobody's word. It's your numbers.
Yeah, very easy. All you have to do is you take your statement, that one that used to come in the mail, and enter in the wages. And most people under CSRS have had very few wages under Social Security. So you might enter like 5 years of wages, and then you project what you might work after you retire, and then it'll just push calculate, and it'll tell you what you get.
Okay.
As if you were old enough today, because we don't know what it's going to be 10 years from now.
Right? Well, yeah, you timed your arrival just perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. I was enjoying listening to the show
question.
On the way in. It was very nice.
Okay. Now, one of the four bullet points on today's outline, and it says, how do you best manage money pre-retirement regardless of the stage of your career? So, in other words, we're pre-retirement at some stage. Beginning, but not real beginning, mid, and late. All right, so what do you advise people to do? Let's take somebody that's been with Uncle 5 to 10 years with regards to the thrift.
That's been with
Uncle Sam. Their beginning career.
Catching the lingo there. For 5 years, the beginning of their career, what you really want to make sure that you're doing is saving as much as you can. And it's difficult in the beginning of your career. At the very least, most likely if you're in the beginning of your career, I'm going to guess you're a FERS employee, you want to put at least 5% in the TSP because it gets matched. So that's the beginning. If you can start by doing that, you're on your way. Then I think a next goal would be to try to maximize your savings in the TSP, maybe a Roth IRA, maybe saving. There might be other goals. I mean, that's the one thing early in your career is a challenge. You're juggling multiple goals. You might have kids. You're saving for their education. You might be saving to buy your first home. You might just be saving to have some extra cash. So beginning of your career, I think 5% would be my goal for retirement. If not more.
Okay. And let's do that match again, because I would hope that everybody understands it. But what the government is saying is if you put in 5%, we'll put in 5%. So
right.
You've doubled your money already.
And on a pre-tax basis.
Yeah.
So if you make $50,000 and put $2,500 in, it becomes $5,000 versus that $2,500 turning into $1,500 or whatever it is on an after-tax basis.
Yeah. The TSP has a brand new campaign. They call it the 5-5-5. And it's 5 funds, 5%, 5 minutes to do it. So, you know, if you're someone who's saying, I just can't get to that 5%, they have a really cute animated video on YouTube that the TSB just put out this month for Financial Literacy Month. And it makes it very clear as to the benefits of doing that.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to look at that.
Okay. We just got a caller, and it's been put on paper. It's an individual, says it's a wife, is currently retired. She wants to buy a house with her retirement money. Under CSRS, is this a good idea? Let me take the first swing at the pitch here. All righty. I don't know. I mean, the question is, are you CSRS? But I don't know if it's any different than it would be FERS. You got a higher annuity with CSRS. My guess is the question to buy a house with retirement money. Now, the only retirement money you're going to buy a house with is the thrift. Now, you might be able to pay monthly payments with your annuity, but if you're trying to buy something, you're not going to buy it with your annuity. You're going to take money out of the thrift, which is poison. Excuse me, you all might not agree with that, but if you take any kind of money out of the thrift, with the exception of a Roth thrift, you're going to pay taxes on it. And if you're going to buy a house, unless it's an extremely inexpensive house, you're going to lose a third to a better of the money. So you're not going to have the money to buy the house.
Well, the other common question comes up very similar to that is, should I pay off my house with
right.
my thrift? You know,
mm-hmm.
if I have $100,000 left on my mortgage, I just take it out. Well, first of all, you can't just take out $100,000 to pay off $100,000.
Right, right.
You could do. I always tell them take monthly payments and pay it down.
Absolutely.
We have less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, you don't want to. Most circumstances, you don't want to take giant chunks out of your TSP because, as you know, Bob, it'll add to your taxable income and put you in a very big tax bracket.
Okay. Final comments to add to our net worth, Joe.
To add to our net worth is just. I beg people to just take the time to kind of look at their situation, run the math out. Even if it's a simple calculator, and see where they stand. It helps you make decisions to get some clarity on your situation and retire when you know you can afford to do so.
Okay. Cammie?
Just take the time to understand all of your benefits to see how they all fit together between the thrift plan, the FERS or the CSRS, and Social Security, and figure out what it would look like today versus a year or two from now.
And there's good news at the end of the rainbow. That's my main point. If you take the time to do the two things Tammy and I just talked about, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely.
Okay. And to listen to the show. And yes. To read Tammy's GovExec articles. And one of these days we'll be more active with webinars. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with another show on financial literacy. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.